Welcome to Life and Laughs Podcast.
Say hello again to your favorite hosts. A man that would charge neighborhood kids 25 cents to watch him dance like Michael Jackson. And a man that became popular for his parachute pants and breakdancing. Here's Johnny Sanchez and Elias Israel.
Hey, welcome back. It's Life and Laughs Podcast.
Hey.
We got to say a special thanks, first of all, to our sponsor, Dead and Buried, Inc.
Yeah, Dead and Buried. Here's the cool thing. When I was over there just a few weeks ago, they were preparing an order. They do these giant touring band shirts, you know, and all their merch shirts. And they had like 70,000 shirts that they were doing. And I was picking up my order for 100 masks. I thought that my 100 mask order was big. And I was like, I hope these guys can handle it. These guys, that's the beauty of it. They treated me like I was a golden customer. You know what I'm saying? And that's what they do. From the smallest order to the most giant order, they just know how to do business over there at Dead and Buried.
You guys check them out if you need anything printed, t-shirts, bumper stickers, anything you can think of, that's deadandburiedinc.com. Elias, we have a wonderful show today.
Yep.
Coming up, a guy that was on MTV's Real World Boston, very popular, Cyrus Yarbrough, better known as just Cyrus, to those of you that were fans of the show. He also competed on the Real World versus Road Rules series on different episodes of that. He's coming up in a few moments.
Survey said.
According to a new survey, 88% of women say that men who do this in public are more attractive. What would you think that might be?
I'm going to think something noble, something like, here's what I'm going to say. I'm going to say it's opening the door for somebody else. I'm going to say something like that is going to stand out.
Man, that's an awesome answer. And as a man, it's kind of frustrating a lot when you open a door and no one says thank you and they just walk on in. Like, you know, don't you in the back of your mind, you just want to slam the door?
Yeah, but you know what? I still hold to this, that if you ever feel insecure or not noticed, just stand around and open the door for people. And because eventually you are going to be like, people look at you and go, oh, thank you. They used to. They used to before everyone was covered up. Now they're covered up, and I don't know what their expression is anymore.
Oh, well, since you just said they're covered up, the answer to this question, according to a new survey, 88% of women say that men who do this in public are more attractive. It's wear a face mask.
What?
That can be taken a couple of different ways.
No, it can only be taken one way. It can only be taken one way. Men are so disgusting that you find us more attractive when you don't see us?
Yeah, I've noticed that when I see women now that are wearing the mask as like people, maybe waitresses or whatever, it draws more attention to their eyes. And you notice their eyes. I've seen so many people with beautiful eyes because of the mask.
Yeah.
And so in that regard, I can maybe understand a little bit how they think that men may be more attractive in that regard. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe so. And I do agree with it. I think it draws back to like culture of olden days, like of thousands of years, like a Middle Eastern culture where you see some of the women who only their eyes are showing, and that it was kind of the concept is that it will draw you into what you can see, and so maybe we do appreciate more just that little glimpse rather than the whole advertisement that we're used to seeing.
Yeah, and in some of our cases, the men with the big shaggy beards and nastiness and no teeth, so maybe it does enhance their appearance as well, possibly.
88% say that?
88% of women, according to this survey, think it's more attractive for a man to be wearing a mask. They find it more attractive.
Why am I getting all this dental work done?
You picked the worst time to try to show off your new dental work.
Dang it.
We have to wear a mask all the time.
Take them out. Hey, Johnny, I've got one for you. 99% of Americans will not do this when they fly. They will not do this when they fly. 99%.
For me, I'm probably in the minority of this. I take Valium when I fly. So 99% of people probably do not take some. Well, I don't know. I think more people probably would take that. But for me, I would say take some kind of medication, possibly.
Huh.
I bet it's more than that, though.
99%. I would say I fly a lot, and I would say that, you know, if you look at those airport bars, there's no shortage of people gulping down those drinks before they get on a flight. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of the same thing. Like, so it's an interesting answer. It's a good answer, but it is the wrong answer. The right answer is choose a middle seat. 99% of Americans will not choose a middle seat when they're flying.
Yeah, and you fly alone. When you go and select your seat, is it the closest by the window, or do you like the aisle seat?
I'm a window guy, and the reason why is because I'm very comfortable sleeping on planes, and when I can be at the window, I'll just lean over this way. You know what I'm saying? But the problem with that is I also will get too cozy, and then I'll lean over this way, and then that's the reason 99% of people don't want to be in that middle seat.
Have you ever woken up drooling on somebody you didn't know, a stranger?
Yeah, man. Yeah, at least twice a year.
How awkward.
One time I fell asleep. This literally happened to me. I fell asleep and I woke up and there was a child laying in my lap. A small child, an infant child, was laying on my lap. I had no idea who this child was. And the mom sitting next to me, the owner of the child, she was asleep. So I was like, I guess this is my child now. I don't have enough money. I don't have the discretionary income to cover this.
That could have been bad for you if she woke up and saw. She could have thought you took the child from her.
Yeah.
That could have gone really bad for you.
I think I'd be the worst person to steal a child, because if my strategy was to move the child only 6 inches.
Well, you know, most cases now, you can't sit in the middle seat, I believe. Is it still that way on flights? You fly quite a bit.
Yeah, it's that way on Southwest flights. Now, I think most of the other ones have opened up that middle seat. And on Southwest flights, at the end of October in 2020, which is this year, then middle seats are bad. It's game on after that.
I would hate to be forced to sit in a middle seat. You know what I'm saying? With the pandemic still going, still cases out there on the rise in some states. That would be scary to be forced to sit in that middle seat between two strangers.
Right. That's exactly what that little child thought. That's why he was crawling over my seat.
Hey, next on our list here, 17% of teenage drivers say that this causes them the most anxiety behind the wheel. You know what we're talking about. What causes, like with your teenage drivers in your household, what causes them anxiety when they're driving?
I'm going to go ahead and say their parent texting them. They don't mind getting texts, but their parent texting them, well, I think that causes anxiety. Maybe, is that it?
Well, hopefully they're not reading any of their texts while they're driving. That would scare me to death. Yeah, my son would do that. He would
right,
do
big
that.
Big news flash, everybody. John's son is not the only one out there doing that. That is cancer culture. We are stuck with this now. It's not like it's going to go away. It's not getting better. We can act like, oh, yeah, if we just tell them and we put up those signs, you know, those clever signs they put on the highway sometimes of, hey, don't look at your phone right now, or whatever. And they make it rhyme, you know, look at your phone right now and you'll see a brown cow. I don't know, but I don't know why a brown cow would be what you would see if you looked at your phone, unless you're into that. I don't know. The chocolate milk. But yeah, they're looking at that phone. They're looking at that phone.
They're attached to that phone all the time. And so it's an addiction. So when they get behind the wheel and you have to drive, most cases you're in the car at least 10, 15 minutes. For a teenager to go that long without looking at their phone, man, that's almost impossible. But the answer here, and this was true about my son when he started driving too, 17% of teenage drivers say that this causes them the most anxiety. It is going through a drive-thru because it's such a narrow turn, then you got to get close to that window. So yeah, my son would do that all the time. He would be so nervous and I would just laugh and he'd be like 5 feet from the window, you know, when he was first learning to drive. And then of course, on the other hand, in all fairness, I have to say he would make fun of me though, because I would always drive over the curb at this one specific restaurant. There's a Burger King where I live and it looks like it ends earlier than it does. And I have a long truck. So he would make fun of me more than I would him, probably.
Right. I can attest to, I don't have one child of driving age that has not hit scraped the cars on a drive-thru. Every one of them have hit something, hit a curb, hit a side. In one case, hit the car in front of them. And then they blamed it on the car. How you don't blame it on the car in front of you? What'd they do? Put it in reverse in a drive-thru? Come on.
Oh, you see that squirrel run across the drive-thru real quick? I was trying to miss it. I was trying to miss that squirrel getting that fry.
How about this? A new survey asked people to name what outdoor activity made them feel most like a kid again.
Ooh, man, what would make me feel most like a kid? For me, just playing basketball on a basketball court somewhere. I did that all day, all night as a little kid. I would be at the park, up the street, on the basketball court somewhere.
It's definitely part of the correct answers. The correct answers are flying a kite, fishing, playing sports. The number one is riding a bike.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something you can't do in this generation as much as you could when we were kids. We were riding bikes all over Southwest Rock, where I grew up. You could ride your bike everywhere and be safe, not have to worry about a thing, and definitely can't do that these days.
I lived in Sylvan Hills community in Arkansas when I was just a wee lad, and I would ride my bike. Me and my friend Tony Jones, we'd get our bikes out, and we'd go into these woods. We would be gone all day. No one cared. No one asked about. Like, one time, this is how much they didn't care. One time, I got upset, and I said, I'm running away, and I packed my bag. I didn't tell anyone else I was running away, but I ran away the whole entire day, and then I got hungry at dinner time and came back. They didn't even know I was gone.
You know something I used to do? You probably did this too, especially as a little boy. Did you ever put the playing card in your spokes to make it sound like it had a motor?
Yeah.
Like it's a motorcycle?
That's it. Loud pipes save lives, man.
I had more bicycles stolen as a kid. I had 3 bicycles stolen in my neighborhood. One was like a couple of days after I had just gotten it at Christmas. I used to love riding bikes, but that was the last one. They didn't get me any more bikes after that last one.
Hey, remember when our bikes used to, like, you'd have the pedals, and if you slammed your foot backwards, like, it didn't have that free give like they have now. It immediately just slam on the brakes. Remember that? We skid out. That was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Who could leave the longest skid mark?
Yep.
Next on our survey here, most people learn to swim at this age. What age did you learn to swim?
Oh, well, I am half Mexican, so when my family came here, they relied on me to swim part of the way. Is it too soon for that? Probably not the best political climate for that joke. No, honestly, I've always been a horrible swimmer. So I don't even know what I can tell you I was. Like, if you ever see me out just swimming and wading in the water, it's only because I'm trying to stay alive. Just know to come rescue me. You're not going to see me for recreation going out there and swimming. I don't like swimming. Hey, remember that song, Phil Collins, that In the Air Tonight? There's a story that's always been behind it where he saw someone see someone drowning and they didn't step in.
I never knew that story.
Yeah, that's what the whole song is about, is to this guy that Phil Collins was watching. That guy was watching somebody else drown and he didn't step in, which leads me to the question, hey Phil, instead of writing a song over there, why didn't you jump in the water and help the guy?
Phil pulls out his notebook.
I know we need a hit song. The guy drowning come up with a doo 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 later.
Oh my gosh. I was a good swimmer from the age of 4 years old. Loved it. But the way I learned, which will sound a little bad, but it did make me learn how to swim. Uh-huh. And I remember back in the day, a lot of kids learned to swim this way. My dad took me and threw me into the swimming pool. I learned how to swim. And again, there's not a lot, you know, that I remember from my childhood, but I can remember being underwater when he threw me in, and he kept doing it. As soon as I came up, he'd take me and throw me back to the deep end, and I'd come up. But I remember a lady coming over and pulling me up and getting mad at my dad. But I learned how to swim that day. I wouldn't recommend you probably doing that, especially these days. But, man, I was like a fish out of water. I would do backflips off of there 4 and 5 years old. But the answer is, according to this survey, that most people learn how to swim at the age of 8 years old.
8 years old.
So yeah. 8 years old. There you go. Most people.
And I'll say this. I feel like, you know, a lot of people will hear that and say, I can't believe people used to do that. Settle down, millennial generation, because back in the olden days, listen, there was no required seat belt. Like, it was suggested. The seat belt was if they thought you were going to hit something, the parent would just shoot the arm out to the side.
Yes.
Like that. And it was good enough. And then if your head hit the dash, then your head hit the dash. That's the way that we grew up. If you saw someone wearing a helmet whenever we rode bikes, that's because we're chasing them. I mean, come on.
My mom, in fact, to punish me, would hit the brakes to make me hit the dash.
Right, right.
Talk back to me again. Bam. Elias, coming up, a guy that was on MTV's Real World Boston, Cyrus Yarbrough. Hang on for that.
Life and Laughs podcast is brought to you in part by Dead and Buried Inc. Building a brand is exciting, but there's a lot more that goes into looking professional and staying consistent online than we tend to think. At Dead and Buried Inc., we're here to help complete your creative project. We provide top quality screen printing, advertising materials, and marketing services for bands, brands, and businesses of all sizes. With low minimums, fast turnaround times, and the ability to customize anything, we're here to help you from start to finish. So visit deadandburiedinc.com. That's Dead and Buried Inc.
And now, two men that would practice dance moves from Paula Abdul and the In Living Color dancers, Johnny and Elias.
Welcome back to Life and Laughs podcast. On the Celebrity Hotline is a reality TV star that was a contestant from MTV's The Real World Boston. He appeared in 4 seasons of The Real World Road Rules Challenges, winning the Extreme Challenge, and he has also appeared on TV shows and movies as well. Welcome to Life and Laughs podcast, Mr. Cyrus Yarbrough. What's up, man?
What's up? I like the introduction, and thank you. I got to check you on that. You got something wrong, though, brother. It wouldn't be me if I didn't check you on that. It's been 5 challenges, 1-1, made it halfway in 2, made it to the end of another one, and the other one was kind of just so-so.
Congratulations. You plan on doing any more of these?
Of course. You know, as soon as we get this call right here, I'm going to go get the workout in. Daily, I try and do between 3 to 5 miles. However I can get it in, I get it in, and then we kind of go from there. That's just a start.
Awesome, man. Well, I got to wish you a happy early birthday, because I saw you have a birthday coming up in a couple of days. And man, I got to say, we are just 3 days apart in age. Same year. My birthday is Tuesday.
Wow.
So we could be brothers, because my dad was really active.
I'm not sure what you mean by that.
Let's just say there's more than one Johnny running around.
Well, I got to say, man, I'm dressed here in this Lakers gear because I saw your Lakers fan being out there. So I kind of think, because I played basketball, you played basketball, we're the same age, we got a lot in common, man. I'm kind of like the white version of you, I think.
Okay, so I want to play myself then. When are we going to do this?
Let's do it, man. I don't know. I think I'm a little more out of shape. I'm not working out every day like you, so.
Why not? What do you mean? You look like you work out, man. You look good over there. Unless that's a screen effect.
That's from the chest up.
He's got his face poking through one of those holes. It's just a background.
Yeah. I actually have my laptop resting on my stomach right now. It's just right there.
Hey, you said you're running 3 to 5 miles a day, correct?
Yeah.
Man, how is that going in this heat?
Heat doesn't bother me, man. I'm a sweaty guy. I sweat all the time either way. It is what it is. I don't mind anything like that. My problem more so is dealing with soreness of the knees and back, and have to adjust my speed. Now, when I say run, I'm doing somewhere between a power walk and a jog. That's my version of running on concrete.
Yeah. I'm with you. I tried to pick up. I had a quadruple bypass heart surgery a few years ago out of nowhere. Out of nowhere. Yeah, yeah. I was type 1 diabetes since I was 4. So it just, yeah. But the doctor told me you need to stop lifting weights so much and start hitting that cardio. So I tried to run a little bit, and man, I'm telling you, I'm just not a natural runner. And so exactly what you're saying, I'm proud of myself when I walk fast out there and just look at things.
Yeah, I was a runner all day.
Okay.
I hurt my Achilles a couple years back. Back from the Achilles injury. It's just not fun anymore to run. A lot better, but like I said, it's not really a run. It's in between. COVID messed up the other workout, basketball, and doing just different things in the gym. So now I got to, you know, got to figure it out. So this is what I got.
There you go.
Yeah. Are you living in Santa Monica? Is that where you're from?
I'm from Santa Monica, but however, I'm not living in Santa Monica.
Okay, I got you.
Los Angeles, I'm very close. Just enjoying life, man.
You went to high school there, right? I heard you went to high school with some pretty famous people.
Yeah, I went to Santa Monica High, man. And, you know, you're from here, you know people that are famous all day, all night.
I heard Charlie Sheen, Emilio Estevez, Carson Daly, and I think I heard that your brother went with Gary Coleman, and man, I would have loved that. Did your brother ever ask him, you know, what you talking about? Well, I know he gets that all, and he hated it. I know he hated it, but did you ever get to talk to Gary Coleman and say the famous line?
I would see him all the time. He was kind of a punk, I ain't gonna lie.
Yeah. He had that reputation.
He was actually eating at Burger King across the street, but this is when he was young, bro. He went to Crossroads School in Santa Monica, and we see him all the time, but we saw him at Burger King this one day, and he was eating, and we said something to him and tried to say hello, and he got kind of rude. You don't know, I would have flicked his little ass. But he was kind of a punk.
Yeah.
Put you in this whopper, man.
At that age, you don't understand what celebrity is and what celebrity brings, and you just respond and react, and you don't understand that person is really just human. So right, he was responding and reacting to what we gave him, and it wasn't a lot of respect. We treated him like he was another little kid.
And he had a lot of health issues that probably, you know, you don't feel so great most of the time. I'm sure that had a big role in his
mentality. But when you're on TV, then don't bring your ass outside. That's what I said. And that's why I don't have bad days. If I have a bad day, I'll have a bad day in my house unless I have to be out there and, you know, things happen, whatever. But as far as I'm concerned, when you sign that contract to be on television, you're signing your life up for people to walk up to you, to be a part of you, to want to deal with you. And, you know, I signed that and I treat it that way. You know, anyone, you want to speak to me, we'll talk. You want to take a picture of me, we'll probably take a picture. As long as you're not completely disrespectful, more so to people around me, my woman and whatnot, I'm fine with it. Because I'm used to being disrespected on a lot of levels to other people. But our reality is a little different than the standard person walking around reality. So it's a bit different, and I'm just used to that. So I'm fine with all that stuff. As long as you're not physically harming me, we can deal with words, we can do all that stuff, and don't offend the woman I'm with, and we're fine. He's offended by me talking over his Whopper.
He couldn't have ate a Whopper, man. There's no way Gary Coleman could have finished a Whopper.
Well, you have a Whopper Jr., sir. Don't forget about that. You do have a Whopper Jr.
Man, I heard you did some acting, though, as a kid, too. You got an early start in the business, so to speak. Tell us a little bit about that.
I mean, out the gate, you know, when you're in L.A., there's agents everywhere. There's people everywhere. And like I said, by nature, you see people that have been on television all the time randomly. And half the people you don't even know are on television or in this movie or that movie, especially as kids. And, you know, got approached by a few agencies, and they wanted me to come do this audition and do that audition and basketball this, basketball that. So there was a Reebok commercial. There was a Adidas commercial. I haven't done my favorite, which is Nike, but I also work with Nike in collaboration. So I've done that. But, you know, commercial thing was always something off the gate. Got an agent, did that stuff, booked a couple of gigs here and there, got my feet wet. It was cool. Like, it wasn't, you know, life changing because it was kind of a standard thing back then. But it was, you know, it was something because we had people at our high school that were in all kind of movies. Always. Once we got to high school, grade school was a little different. And there are celebrities around, but high school, I went to, they call it Celebrity High, like you said, the names you rambled off. Me and Carson Daly were really close. We were in the same clique. He was a little younger than me, but the same people hung out with him, hung out with me. We played ball on the regular together, but you know, it's Celebrity High. That's all I can really say about that place.
Now, talking about basketball, I mean, you were pretty good at basketball. You went on to play in college, I believe, in Hawaii, right?
Yeah, I played some college ball, man. I don't like to say I was good. You know, in high school, I was definitely ranked nationally as a sophomore, and I did all that stuff. I won my first year. We won a CIF and all that stuff, and I was definitely an integral part of the team. More of a defensive player than an offensive player at the time. I got the offense done, but defense was my thing. Lockdown, it's like Harold Miner. You're my age, so you should know who that is. Yeah. In his house. I mean, things like that. Yeah, they happen. I played with all the top people in the country, from Sean Kemp to Don McLean to Tracy Murray, Mitchell Butler. They were all on my actual team.
Wow.
So that are friends of mine today. We see each other. We have tons of memories and so forth. And I played college ball in Hawaii. I didn't play too great. I did a year in Oregon at a JC, a year here in Santa Monica at a JC too, which we did really well, but we got suspended that year. We had an illegal player on the team, but things were good, man. Basketball's a part of my life. It is me. If you know me, you know ball definitely stands out and is at the forefront.
Like, but I was talking about
to a 3-on-3, me and you, 3-point shootout. When you want to go, the white side against the black side. Let's go.
I thought he was saying 3-on-3, like counting two of me because I'm so fat right now, man. I thought that's what I heard.
No, I'm not that rude, man. I wouldn't do anything.
Go to the Foot Locker, get me a ref outfit so I can stand in the middle.
I love it. I love it, man. Yeah, man, that was this play, man. That was my thing. That was my thing. I was a shooter, of course, and of course I had my defense, but you know, I wasn't as fast. I couldn't jump as high, which I could jump. I mean, I could get the rim and stuff, but I wasn't a dunker or nothing like that. But that was my thing. I was a shooter, man. Paul will tell you a little bit about that. In fact, I had a nickname that they would put up banners. It was called White Magic because my game was styled a little bit after Magic Johnson at that time. I did the no look passes, but okay, my thing was 3-point shooting, which unfortunately that didn't come along until after you know, the 3-point line. So
yeah, my first year, there was no 3-point line.
Yeah, mine either. Mine either.
And I wore Air Force Ones when they were a basketball shoe.
Yes. Man, them shoes were good. Oh, man, I could jump in them.
Yeah, nowadays you can't, though. They're like cement.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
For our listeners that may be listening that aren't familiar with the Real World Boston, tell us a little bit about the show and how you got started on it.
Okay. I mean, the Real World Boston was a show that they casted for here. I had a unique introduction because I wasn't actually trying to get on the show. I was trying to work behind the scenes, and that's how they found me. And I went on to work behind the scenes and cast for at least 50 different reality shows. I worked for put people on TV, some that have won competitions, some that not. But so I got on the show that way. And Boston was really cool. It was in a historical firehouse where they filmed a bunch of other really cool movies and projects at. It was like a community center. It was in the nicest area of Boston, too. It was in Beacon Hill, which is a few blocks behind Cheers and a few blocks away from Boston Common. And in the firehouse, we had gone on to be my best friend in the house, Sean Duffy, who was the congressman, Sean Duffy, who's not anymore. He was in the house. He was Wisconsin's congressman for a bunch of years. He ended up being my best friend. He's a professional lumberjack, actually, too. He's the number one tree climber in the world at that time. Then there's Jason Cornwell, who is from Arkansas, was kin to the Clintons, and he was a poet, and now he owns a casting company out here in L.A., one of the only independent casting companies out here. He's been doing that for a while. And then there's Genesis from Gulfport, Mississippi, who's out here as well, and she has the internet business. And Camila, who was the African-American girl on the show that we technically didn't get along great on the show, but we're good now and have been. I mean, we were okay. I think they wanted a little more out of us, but it didn't work out. She's a child doctor in New York. She's married with a couple of kids and doing well. And then there's Elka, which was the young girl on the show. She was a Latin girl from Brownsville, Texas. She was dating like a rock star dude, but her mom had just passed from some sort of cancer and she got caught smoking on the show. So it was a big ordeal. Cool girl now. She's married with a kid, doing great down there in Texas. And then there is Montana. She's living out here. She has her own, I think it's one of those peaceful type meditation, massage therapy businesses. She has a few kids out here too, and she's doing great. I think that's it. And then there's me. I don't know how you would describe me, but I'm just me.
I know you were described as a ladies' man on the show. I know that.
I did my thing for quite some time, like any young strapping stallion should at that age. What am I going to do? I had a good time.
Yeah, you were, what, 24, 25 when you were on the show?
I was the last 25-year-old to be cast on the show, me and Sean. They wanted people that are a little younger and had no inhibitions. Unlike us, we were just older, thinking about life, money, and what's really going to happen when we're done, how we can formulate that into business as opposed to just making a TV show. So, have Cyrus in a nutshell. I was all about figuring out a marketing plan so that I continue to make money for years after that, and that's exactly what I did.
I heard you say on an interview that time of your life was a rather difficult time. Could you elaborate on that?
Best way to put it is that the first statement is I understand why people committed suicide. I had done everything society had asked me to do. across the board. I'd been a standout person in my community since I was a child. I was always taught, you know, go to school, you'll make some money, live a good life, start a family, such and such. They'll get you a good job and all that. Well, I did all that stuff. First of my family graduate college, traveled the world already at a young age, did all that stuff. And when I finished, I wasn't able to find a job. You know, we don't have people around you that have been through that and know how to encourage you or get you right for the job world. And there's only so much people can do. It's mostly on you. And it wasn't conveyed to me that way. You know, rest in peace. My high school counselor, Mrs. Durbin, phenomenal lady. She took me under her wing. Everything that I was supposed to be, I wouldn't have been without her. I'll say that much. She took me under her wing and she tutored me and she put me in some situations to help me succeed. When it comes to ACT and SAT tests, she sat me down and she's like, you are a phenomenal athlete. You are ranked. No one's helping you through this. If you don't have this class, this class, this class, this class, this class, you're not going anywhere, no matter what and how good you are. I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm a dude right now.
Yeah.
She made me take extra classes and sit through extra training and do all the stuff that I did not want to do, including summer school and so forth. And I did all those things, and she really believed in me, and she pushed me to a limit where I know I have to give back to people and society and kids that are in need just because of that. All it needed was my push was to have that one person that really believed in me that was outside of my family. And, you know, typical story, stepdad in and out of jail, mom raising three, you know, little Black kids and in the semi-hood and moving back and forth and all that stuff. There was really nothing with foundation there. And this woman, for whatever reason, stepped in and did this for me.
Wow.
She's amazing, man. Like, I can't even thank her enough. And, you know, it's one thing, you know, had fans in high school. That's fine and cool, but those fans aren't helping you do what you need to really do to get to the next level, to understand life. And she did that for me, and God rest her soul.
Isn't that something, man, that we're all, I think, everyone in this world is just one mentor away from reaching the plan that God has in our life sometimes, man. It sounds like you found yours.
I completely agree with that, man. It's life is a strange thing, man, and I'm all about karma and good deeds and not even expecting anything back, just doing good, man. And, you know, I always say that because the current climate we're in right now in America is crazy. And the last thing it seems to be about is unity, helping, and all this stuff. And it used to be about that. It really did. And now it feels like we're furthest from it than we've ever been. And I preach this every day. Yes, I'm here to fight the good fight for the have-nots always. And I have everything I want and need and more.
Yeah.
It's about the people that don't. When I was at that point in my life where I said it was the worst part of my life and I understood why people committed suicide is because I did everything people wanted me to do and it wasn't enough. And so I bitched at the courts time after time after time. And this dude's basically like, you know what? I'm sick of hearing you bitch about this. You need a job. Here's a job. Here's a number, place. You go here. They'll hire you. I was like, all I want is hopefully some benefits, this, that, and the other, get my teeth worked on, whatever it may be, and a job so I don't feel like a failure. Went in, did everything you could possibly do in an interview, ended up being the wrong thing, and I ended up telling my life story. She asked me questions. First of all, it's a casting assistant position. If you know what that means, I'm supposed to go grab the coffee, run and get some food, whatever. Nothing. Why the hell is there five people interviewing me? So I knew something was weird. Got the three-piece suit on. It's 100 and something degrees outside. I'm driving a 1989 steel blue Dodge Omni with no AC. So I drive to the valley and I find the building. I park down the street kind of because I had to take off all my clothes because I was dripping sweat. I told you I'm a sweater. I changed literally street parking lot kind of thing, got dressed, ran up to the door, hit the button. Before I could hit the button, they say, Cyrus, come inside the door, up the stairs and make a right. I'm like, okay. All right, go. Get in there, bring in my little case that I had, and I had three different resumes. One geared toward what I'd done, basically nothing. One geared toward what I would do, basically anything. And another one, like, working with kids. And so I sat down, and she's, like, asking me questions. She's like, well, before we really get started, go type this business letter up and come back. And I get in there and got my trusty typing finger, pulled it out, had to go in there and peck away. Yes, one finger, pecked away. Got it done like 20 minutes later and couldn't figure out how to make the computer print it. And this chick's walking by and I'm like, you have one option and that's to come in here and help me. I need help. And I'm literally dripping sweat, bro. She comes in. I was like, it's in there. Just print it. Hit the button. Boom. So I'm like, you're amazing. We talked for a minute. Shake phone numbers. Took off. And I go and pat down and come back in the room and they're like, we thought you left. And they all start laughing. I'm like, well, let me see what you got in your resume anyway. I walk over there, I sit down, give her the business letter I just typed, and then I pull out I didn't figure out which resume was in there to grab, hand it to her. And she was like, interesting. She goes, tell me about yourself. And I was like, well, college days, blah, 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 blah. Stuff was cool. I thought Hawaii would be interesting enough for her to be like, yeah, this is awesome, amazing. You tell someone you went to college in Hawaii, they lose their minds. She was semi-impressed. And she's like, no, tell me about you. I was like, well, I've been on my own since the 10th grade. I moved out of the house because the hood was too much. And I've been on my own making things happen since then. Thought that was enough. She's like, no, I want to know about you. And in my mind, I said, okay, I'm about to get something major out of this. She's digging and prying in areas she probably shouldn't be going. And it clicked, bro. I went back to the day I was born. So people don't understand, in the South, they had a white hearse and a black hearse. One's used for the hospital, one's used for funerals. We were at church, I guess. I'm in my mom's belly. We're at church and she goes into labor and they take off the black hearse. The white hearse was being used already. The thing gives out a gas on a dirt road.
Oh, no.
Mom says I pop out like a bottle of champagne. Right away onto the floor. They lay me on the back of my head. That's why it's kind of flat back there. They lay me down. My dad passes out. And long story short, they flag down a car going down this dirt road. I'm still on the cord. They put us all in this car and drive to the hospital. And they literally cut the cord in the parking lot and rushed me in. They thought I was going to die.
Oh, man.
Came to the world with a bang. Started my story there, got their attention, brought them from that moment all the way to the present. About 3.5 hours, watched them laugh, watched them cry. Lord, behold, I'm on the real world. And
wow.
Got pushed right to the semifinals. And yeah, that's kind of how it happened, man. And then when I was offered it, I didn't really take it because it wasn't that much money. And they, you know, informed me that this and this thing would be happening in that. But, you know, what do you think we got paid for that?
Oh, man. Back in those days, early on, probably what? Maybe $500?
For
like a month?
No, I wasn't that bad, bro. I punch you in the throat. No, we got, I think it was 300 and something a week, but it was 2 weeks. And so that was 6 months of my life that was being spent rent free. You know, it was an experience. It was definitely an experience. So
how about the food? Did they provide the food inside the house? And
nah, bruh, that's part of the drama. Think about this. You use your last dime to buy some food and you come in there and you got Puck drinking out your case of milk or dipping his two fingers in your in your hummus. You go get pissed. And that's kind of what goes down. That's great television there, sir. What do you mean?
Uh-huh.
But it's great television.
Man, that's hilarious. But you're exactly right. They try to put you in these situations to bring out the drama. Was
No, that's not a situation. That's just real life. Right now,
if you ate your stuff,
you would be pissed off, right?
Right.
That's when a situation, they set up your living environment and you do what you want to with it. They just know how people are.
Was any of the show scripted?
No, you go through a full psychological exam. Like, there's certain shows where people don't realize your psyche is completely in jeopardy. You go to like Survivor. You know, there's a lot of stuff that happens on Survivor that you guys don't see because it doesn't seem right. When people don't eat, you don't think straight. Period, point blank. You watch Naked and Afraid, it's the same kind of thing. So you have to go through a psychiatric kind of thing or psychological thing, I'm sorry, ahead of time to make sure that you're equipped to do this show. You might lose it and kill a cameraman. You never know what someone's going to do.
Yeah.
Right.
That's real. That's just the reality of it.
Yeah.
And in doing so, you know, you got what you're going to get. But they know. If you broke, you're going to eat. You might not steal from the store, but the refrigerator technically is yours too, which some people don't feel that way and some people do. It's kind of like a frat environment. You know, no matter what you do or say in a frat, they ain't going to clean. Our house was filthy as hell. I had a problem with that. And they know how people live. They know that some nasty motherfuckers out there don't wash, don't clean. Jason, my boy, but I remember what he did to Sean was foul. Bought a pair of Sean jeans, didn't wear no drawers, and walked a good 10 miles in them. And it's sweaty and didn't even watch him right away. They knew how that cat lived. And if they put that dude with that dude, that there's going to be something that ain't going to work out. The only brother in the house was the same way. They knew that there was certain shit that I just wasn't going to do. They knew that I was going to party my ass off. I think I was there for 5-6 months. And I think as a total in time, there was about a little over 2.5 weeks that I did not go out. Total. Party animal, out of control. It was amazing.
Well, you know, also because of your appearance on the show, you've been able to parlay that into like a 20-something year career speaking, making appearances all over the nation, maybe the world. So this show, although you might not have got paid much at the time, you've reaped so many benefits. Talk about some of the benefits of being on that show.
I'll just say this. You realize right away the power of television when you show up somewhere and you feel people talking and looking and thinking and so forth. Well, this was like a whole whole nother level. I was 25. I couldn't find a job. I got on this show. I was going to make this my job and figure out my next move, my next path. And I figured out I could show up at this bar. And if I'm there and the cameras are there, tons of people are going to come. The only thing missing is me making money off of that moment. I went into a place, nice place out there. And I basically told them, you know what? I ordered the most expensive steak on the menu. And I said, no money. Offered the most nice bottle of red wine and white. And I don't really like either of them, but I just did it because I thought I could. And I wanted all the trimmings, dessert, and everything. And I told them, I got no money, though. And they're like, what? I was like, well, send the manager over. He comes over, and I let him know, look, this is me. This is what I'm going to do. This is what you're going to do. And if you don't want to do it, cool. I'm going to go to your competitor across the street, and you watch the lines there. And when it's cracking and crazy, and you want me to work for you, I'm coming back, and I'll double the price. You either take care or you don't. I'm not sure what you're talking about, sir. Okay, you're a little old. You don't know what's going on. But when you get to the kitchen, tell everyone in there you have Cyrus in your restaurant right now. And you'll see the reaction, and we'll see what happens. By the time I got to the elevator, I could hear the screams in the kitchen. Box kill this. Went right across the street, walked right in. They welcomed me with open arms, sat me down. How do I get you to come to my bar? I'll be here every freaking day or every chance I get, but I need this, this, and this, and no written contract or agreements. Man to man, we talk. And he's like, really? I was like, yeah. He's like, okay. I was like, do what you got to do. This was the first year they advertised the names and faces of what we were looking like and where we live. They'd never done that before. So people knew and were anticipating. Man, the call went out. I was at that bar for 3-4 hours. The line was down the street just to say hello. I mean, I had one on each knee, getting my head massaged. And so then they said, okay, we'll do it a step further. We want you to work with the beer company. Any bar you go to, you got a $500 tab. Any day you want to go, do whatever you want to do. We'll give you $30 an hour or two. So you'll kind of be a worker for us. And you can go to all our spots and do what you got to do and figure out how to make money there. I was like, dude. I got 10 to 20 cases delivered to my, you know, doorstep a week. You can see there's huge boxes in the background that are blurred out. We would see girls come up to the house. We'd grab six packs and run to the door. Hey, how you guys doing? What's up? Come on in. Dude, it was next level. Some of the people watching this right now might not even get it either, but we were the first reality TV show. Real World was. I was on the sixth season, but we were the first show. There was nothing else out there. I walk into a joint. I got people genuinely wanting to holler at me and talk to me. And Robert De Niro, hey, what's up, Cyrus? How's it going, brother? Are you kidding me right now, fool? This is my life for years back then. We were the first show, bro. And everywhere I went, I was put on a pedestal. And I reaped all those benefits. I was one of the first to start doing the college lectures. Right off the bat, I started doing that. And I started calling up different bars and clubs all throughout the U.S. myself. And that parlayed that into national tour with Burger King, national tour with Scion and Toyota, Lincoln giving me a navigator for 2 years. Like, it was the most insane ride. And I just figured out marketing and was pushing it through, doing as much as I could do. And to this day, 27 countries later, every state, at least 30 times, minimum. I've had that many gigs in all these places. I mean, I'm the master of odd jobs, too. I've been booked to do any and everything you could imagine, bro. Why not? You know, it's one of those things. I took it by the horns and just ran with it, bro. And it's been a great ride. Shades I got on now, these are Black Flies. I don't know if you like the lenses, but, you know, they got the radiant lenses in them. These are the Black Flies right here.
Yeah.
Repping with me, riding with me for years. Got my clothing stuff dropping right now. It's my birthday this week, so I'm dropping it this week. You guys can check me out. It's blackdesignerclothing.com. I've always been a designer, but this is my first stab at designing with a computer and designing on a website. I've always done everything by hand. So it's, you know, there's some good ones and some decent ones. I'm going to tighten it up. I'm in the process of doing that. Now, when you call, that's actually what I was doing. But, you know, just out there pushing the different brands, man, while pushing the cause as well.
Yeah, you actually had a store on Melrose, I think, at one point, didn't you?
I had a store for about 5 years, man. Jewelry, accessories, fashion, and art. I had 50-something different local designers, bunch of one-of-a-kind pieces, and it was dope. It did its run. But honestly, you know, I miss it, but don't miss it at the same time. It kept me in one section, and I'm not that kind of person. I've never had a normal job, per se, and that kept me in one place. The other person, my partner, got sick and I had to run everything, and it just was eye-opening and great and fun and cool. I'm not downplaying it, but it wasn't technically me. I'm gonna do something I can operate now online, da-da-da-da-da, boom, go do my other stuff. Writing my book right now, my autobiography, just a story of my life, trying to get that done and finished. Once I finish this site, I'll do that, and that'll be the next big project that I really get out there.
I've also heard that you've even pitched some TV shows.
Write a bunch of shows, man, all kinds of concepts I have. have and been pitching them. Everything from reality-driven court-type show to competition shows to actual reality shows. All unscripted. I keep true to reality. I think there's a big difference between scripted reality, which is most of the shows now, as opposed to reality when I was on TV. Yeah. Tell us, go back outside, come back in, we didn't get the shot. No, if you didn't get the shot, you didn't get the shot, period. Move forward. And so they had to be good at what they were doing as camera people back then. And there was no line. You couldn't cross that line and talk to them and all that stuff. It was more just expressions. Nowadays, they can retake, reshoot, talk. It's a different beast.
Yeah, I was cast on one of the tattoo shows here in L.A., and L.A. Inc., and they did a chess piece on me. But just like you're saying, I had to walk in the door five different times to make it look natural for me walking in the door. And then they didn't start rolling.
Walk again. No.
That's what it was. And then they didn't start rolling the camera on the tattoo until the fourth hour in, where I was just like that. You know, they made it look rough.
It happens, man. It happens. I was on Miami Ink as well. I got my mom's name tatted on my chest when she got sick and passed.
Oh, okay.
I did that joint out there in Miami. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you guys are both hustlers in a way, because you are in control of making your appearances, setting up your appearance. Elias does comedy. He travels the country as well. So you guys are similar in that respect. And I know the coronavirus has affected him a little bit. How's it affected you, Cyrus?
I mean, I'm master of taking a bad situation and making it great. I'll be honest with you now. Right now, today, I'm loving life, having a blast. My other half is phenomenal. Spend more time with her, more time with my dogs. You know, the engagement. Corona's messing with that a little bit, going to the next level. But other than that, I'm making a substantial amount of money. I'm happy. I'm healthiest. Waiting for the next challenge. What the coronavirus did to me was make me more creative, if you could. And I've already done everything creative, but I'm just doing more now. And, you know, I was never a computer guy. I'm trying to create these designs on the computer now, and I've never done that, just to make sure I still got design in me and can kind of transcend from just paper and pen to a computer is weird, bro.
Yeah, but just ask any 10-year-old can help you today.
See, constantly thumping me in the head, man. This guy just won't let up.
No, me too, man. It's our generation. It's a generational thing. Yeah, well, me too. I'm saying.
Dinosaur. I don't want to be a dinosaur, bro. So I have to do things to keep me from being a dinosaur across the board. Mm-hmm. So I'm lifting weights in the backyard. I'm trying not to be a dinosaur. I watch workouts like the challenges now. I'm still trying to get on the challenge. Cats are doing work right now on these challenges. And when I was on last, I'm not saying they're doing it now, but cats were definitely juicing, men and women.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never do anything like that. I'm too old school for all that. I'm going to get done the right way. I'm going to work out the right way, hopefully, and go from there. And if I don't look as good as Joe Schmo that looked like he blew in his thumb and all of his muscles are popped up, shaved, that's never me. I'm going to come in more of a natural body, not as much of a basketball body now as I had then. I can get it done. I just did a podcast about when Derek defeated me in that wrestling match in the Gauntlet 2 down in Trinidad and Tobago. Got my butt kicked by a smaller guy. But you look at the dynamics, he did what he had to do, and he figured it out before I did. I lost. But I had just gotten back off tour. I did like a six-month tour. That was when I did Girls Gone Wild, The Wild World. I did that six-month tour, and that's drinking. And what you have to understand is the amount of alcohol that goes down when you're living that rock star life is insane. And I'm talking, you know, 2-3 bottles a night, and that's not mentioning all the cats that are coming in. And then I still would wake up and go play ball in the morning. That wasn't affecting me. I had to slow my roll. I had to slow my job down and do what I needed to do, you know. But I got to the point where I just swoop, bro. When I'm done with this, I told you I'm running and doing all that stuff. Well, I'm going to go put my sauna suit on and run. I don't care what the temperature is out there. That's just, it's got to happen, you know. Do what it takes. But lo and behold, it's some good looking people on the shows, man. And they do a lot to look that way. I'm not saying they're not putting the work in, but they're also adding that other stuff on too. I just can't do it.
You had a chance a few years ago to do a scene with Kobe Bryant, NBA legend Kobe Bryant, that unfortunately passed away earlier this year. And especially now, that's got to be such a special memory for you in light of that. Tell us a little bit about that experience and how Kobe was.
Man, it was crazy because true reality TV format, they didn't tell me what I was going to be doing. I ran basketball leagues all my life, not all my life, but two big ones prior at that part of my life. I ran two big leagues, and Buna Murray at New and MTV at New, and they were like, yo, we want you to come up, bring a referee gear. We may have you do a basketball game or something. We don't know. To me, it's just another gig. Cool. Get there, show up, and there's a bunch of kids yelling, screaming. I was like, this is awesome. Step back. I'm like, dude, in comes Reggie Miller and Kobe Bryant. I'm like, what the? Now, I'm visual basketball. I know everything about this. I was like, wow. We hung out and stuff, and Kobe, you know, told me, he's like, dude, love your stuff. Watch your stuff. I'm a fan of yours. What? The man was like, that's crazy. He's like, yeah, you know, me and my siblings, we watch your stuff. And I was like, okay. I was like, man, you know, I lost words. What do you say? You know, you've been doing this for a while. You met a ton of famous people everywhere. I've met everyone from Madonna to Michael Jackson, on all those people. And I froze her when I met Madonna. I got to admit, never done that, but it was an intimate thing. We were one on one. So that was crazy. Mm-hmm. But the Kobe thing was like, dude, I just want to shoot some shots with you and hang out. Anyway, so I refereed that game. That game was really cool, man. And Kobe was one of those amazing people. Who, I'm not saying he was flawless. He had issues too, like everyone else, but he's an amazing person. He definitely influenced a lot of people out there. And it was great to work with him. So I created a shirt in his memory. I do have a Black Mamba shirt that I'm definitely getting out there. It's going to be something pushed to the forefront in lieu of him and his entire legacy.
Good. Nice, man. Yeah, so sad that we lost him, but what an experience. I know you've met several celebrities, but to me, especially with him passing, man, that's just an extra special memory probably for you.
For sure, and that was amazing. I just did another podcast too when I knocked out Eminem in that video. It was Video of the Year without me. I forget what year that was, but it was quite a time ago, but when he dropped Without Me, they contacted me, Puck, and Julie to do that scene in the show, and I ended up being the one to knock out Eminem, Cheetos, Fly All Over.
How cool is that, man?
Yes. It was dope, man. We hung out all day, you know. He's a different kind of dude, but, you know, he's cool, man. Had a good time with that. The fact that it was Video of the Year definitely helped my visibility and had more people checking me out because it was Video of the Year. And it is Eminem, the new hot white rapper that now is legendary in my eyes. He's got to be top five. So,
I
know Elias did a little bit of rapping back in the day.
back in junior high, my name was not Elias Israel. It was E.T. Fresh. That's what I went by. I'm 48, so it was back in the day when that kind of, you know, everything went in like that. It was.
Now, I'll tell you, we used to dance in the teen dance clubs, too, man. We would practice these routines. And, in fact, we had matching Magic Johnson Lakers jerseys and the military boots and the big baggy jean, you know, the boys to men kind of look.
Yeah, Bill Biv DeVoe vibe.
You'd never imagine looking at us now, you know. Maybe Elias.
Just that. A throwback podcast, bro.
Yep.
We burned all the pictures and the tapes, though. We didn't want any evidence of that, man.
Don't be depriving us.
Now, do you still work on any casting projects? Do you still pursue that as a career?
Not as a career, but I definitely work on it. Career-wise, you know, there's no real guy like me. There's no real career. It's just figuring things out and moving left, moving right. L.A. lifestyle. I got several things that I'll be doing, companies I'll be affiliated with, working little projects, this, that, and the other. But I need to be creative in order to get the full package for me. It's all about creativity and having the moment to express myself. And that's what makes me happy in life.
Yeah. Seems like you're always looking for the next project, the next step up. And I really admire people like that. They don't get complacent to where they're at. You know, you're always looking to better yourself, but it sounds like not just yourself, but to people around you. And that's really admirable.
As much as possible, man. It's a difficult time, like I said, because a lot of people out there, let's just say we have completely different political views. They'll let that sever their friendships.
Sure.
Sometimes it's going to happen, but, you know, I would think at our age, if we really got love for each other, we don't have to worry about that. That's where we're at, and I try and help people as much as I can, but unfortunately, at this time, a lot of people don't understand that there are two different sides, and they feel like they have to choose one or the other, and there's no communication between the two, and it makes me laugh. I'm like, you're the same people that probably see that cup as half empty, because to me, that cup has always been half full. Even though I may be at a disadvantage in certain ways, I'm at an advantage because I always think that way.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's admirable too. Your hustle, it's an example. Just like that one counselor was an example for you, connecting the dots to your future. I think when we have visuals of people who are really pushing forward and not allowing themselves to just be subject to what's going on around them, but creating the environment, creating the opportunities and seeing those, I think it gives people permission to say, you know what? If he can do that, if she can do that, then maybe that's in me too. But when we don't see that, when we just hear people complaining, that's when everyone just like, well, I guess I can't really do anything. So I thank you for that, for the example that you put out there, because we need more hustlers. We need more people who just make it happen.
Thank you, man. And I always like to say, I'm not saying I'm an angel, and I don't want people to think that I think I'm an angel. No, mm-hmm. I'm like anyone else. I make mistakes. But it's all about how you handle that and how you get back going. Me, have I regretted anything I've ever done in my life? No. Because you know why? I treat every situation as a speed bump. You slow down, deal with it, hit the bump, bang, 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 and get right back up to speed. And as you look at life like that, you'll be fine.
Well, speaking of politics, it seems like I heard you were possibly thinking about entering the political field yourself as a politician, possibly.
There's a few opportunities that have been presented to me, definitely on the city level, and a few things on a much bigger scale, too. And, you know, you can't really talk about those things till they happen. So, yeah, it's definitely something that's not out of my realm of opportunities. And I'm one that keeps himself open to the universe and whatever it has to bring me. If you hire me for anything, there needs to be strict stipulations in what I can and can't say, because I'm a man that's real and I keep it real and I put it all out there. And if you hire me, just know that from a wedding on down. I've done a couple of weddings, I officiate and all that crap. I've done what
you
can imagine I've done. And my point is, you hire me, you know you hired Cyrus. And that's Cyrus. I'm going to be having fun. I'm going to be laughing all the time. You do something stupid, I'm definitely laughing. You trip and fall on your wedding, you will get laughed at. It is what it is.
Right.
For your moment. Your moment embraced by me is going to be funny if it's funny.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I got to tell you this, too, because I saw this, your old basketball teammate, Eddie Hayward. He said you also had tried to do some singing at one time, but he also added, let's just say he's a better basketball player. What's your response?
You know what? So imagine this. Those days that I spent out there trying to be musically inclined and doing what I do, I see half music out, only help me when I'm emceeing a concert and the talent doesn't show up for 45 minutes. Or I'm at spring break and there's 50,000 kids out there and I'm on the microphone and I have to entertain. So all those different things I did back then that I still do, I did for a reason. I'm comfortable if I have to grab that mic and freestyle in front of 50,000 people. Sorry, but thank you, Eddie. I appreciate it. I guess you... But, you know, I've morphed into something different, but I still got some of that that I want to put out. I want to put out a little bit of that more and a little bit of poetry. You know, there's some things out there, but Eddie, I'm going to punch you in the throat when I see you.
Man, you could just do a whole wedding venue, man. You could officiate the wedding, you could sing at the wedding, and then you can DJ the wedding afterwards.
Let's say it's not really singing. I am a reggae enthusiast. I work with Reggae Nation TV for upwards of 20 years, man. Interview the biggest acts in the world, from the Marleys on down.
Wow. And
I engulf that culture. That is me. And so I've had clothing lines dedicated to the reggae movement. And, you know, I live my life just like red, gold, and green, all I mean. And I'm all about it, man.
You've also got 4 movie credits I saw on your IMDb. So, and you did 2 of these, it looked like, this year. So tell us a little about your acting career, if you're pursuing that.
I mean, like I said, I've been doing that stuff since I was a child. I was on Baywatch a bit, too, back in the day when it was the number one show in the world. Actually,
yeah.
School in Hawaii, I was doing the Baywatch thing.
How hard was that to concentrate with all these beautiful women? Because they had the best of the best, beautiful, fit women. How hard was that to concentrate on a set?
That's kind of life here in California, man.
Well, that's true, yeah.
From the city, like, that was on our normal beach that we go to. Like, that's standard for us. So nothing shocking. It was an experience. I was younger, and so it was definitely an experience. But they were paying me to surf and boogie board and hang out and talk to beautiful people the entire day, which, like everything else, I flipped that into running nightclubs and promoting nightclubs and doing events with all those beautiful people that were there on set were being invited to all my functions. And so I was able to parlay that into that.
And you're a surfer. That's something I've always wanted to try. Have you done that all your life?
You're too old, bro. Just forget about it now. No, I mean, I surfed for a bit. I had a big accident trying to surf the wedge in Huntington Beach, and I crushed a couple of vertebrae and almost lost my scholarship. for that. But bodyboarding is much easier and less of a risk, to say, much better at that too. But I grew up doing that my entire life. I have launching also a beach line. It's called Black Beach Brothers Brand. So it's all about brothers at the beach that wear black. So we wear black when it's hot as hell. And I kind of keep my theme going, brother. And, you know, one of the first black surfers is from Santa Monica, the Inkwell. Santa Monica used to be an all-black beach, by the way, right off of Pico. Back in the day, one of the first black surfers was from there. And so that line is dedicated to them. It's Santa Monica Inkwell Beach as well.
Cool. Do you still get stopped all the time when you're out in the stores or places? Do you still get asked for autographs and pictures?
All the time, man. It's everyday life. That's kind of how it works. Things have changed a bit. It's not as much, but every week I'm getting hit up for sure.
That's so cool, man. I mean, think about this. What was that, 1992, 93 that you were on the show? I can't remember what year.
You're trying to age me now, Ro, right?
Let's just say it was a long time ago, and for you to be able to still be here today and to be known from something that, like I said, you've parlayed this into basically a career, and it makes you feel good to know that people still recognize you.
Yeah, but it was also a marketing thing too. Like, I had hair, and I knew if I had hair, that hairline would be back 8 inches, looking LeBronish. If I'd kept that hair, I had dreadlocks, little dreadies for a while, and I thought, if I keep this, it's not going to be the same brand. So I decided to keep it shaven, and 20 years later, I look a lot closer to what I was then. And that's all a marketing thing, and you try and position yourself like that. From my name, and most people only know my first name, is a huge deal, to my shape of my head, to the way I speak. Just everything that I do was done at a time when I made it a lifestyle rather than just, you know, a choice, if that makes any sense. That was all done by design.
It's now time for our fan questions. And we've got three questions from fans of yours. Number one, it says, I want to know if the producers ever found out you continued to date the mom of one of the kids from the center and what happened with the relationship. That's from Jamie from Alaska.
Jamie, of course, they knew everything that was taking place. They were there. They were there and filming all the time. We were friends before anything else, and we're still friends now. And so people need to understand that it was actually, you know, it was a relationship, but a friendship. And so, you know, she's a cool person. Her son is big as hell now. He was a cool kid, and I had him at the social center too. So it wasn't a negative thing how it may have been portrayed as to or through the television. It was completely a positive thing. And it was what it was.
All right. Here's the second one. This is from Christy from Arkansas. She says, I forgot her name, but one of your roommates were fired from the center. Besides what we saw on the show, was there behind the scenes drama that we didn't see?
You're talking about Montana. And the interesting thing was about that whole plot is that she was one of the first people to say I should be kicked off the show because I was dating a parent of one of the kids, which doesn't technically affect the kid. And I never really saw the kid away from the center. She took it upon herself at this huge convention to give one of the kids alcohol. And her statement was, I would do the same thing with my own kids. That's why we got to watch. This is why we got to watch who watches our kids. You should have been fired. You got to go. If I had been that parent, I would have went off on her. Literally. But she got the boot for that. And you saw me just say karma's a bitch, da-da-da, and kind of walk away from it. There was a lot going on. You don't know what you get kicked off the show for, though. And that's part of it. You don't know. It's just what they say. I couldn't have been kicked off for doing anything that I did. I mean, like, you just don't know in that situation. There's not enough information, and they kind of like it like that because you freak out for some reasons, and you probably shouldn't be, and it's just good television. There wasn't a lot other than that.
This next one is from Karen from California. She says, how did working at the center impact your life afterward because you were really emotional when the job ended?
Okay, I don't think I was that emotional when it ended. It was more exhaling of that situation and able to go back to what I know and excitement and nervousness about my life beginning at that point, understanding that I have more power to do what I really want to do. And thank God that situation is over with. Like, 6 months is a long time to be on camera. That's why the show now, or the last 10 seasons, end up being for 2 months. Ours was 6 months, bro. Like, 6 months of being videotaped. They say on average 100 hours a week. It's probably more than that because you got to sleep too. But if you're doing things, they ain't leaving you alone. They really didn't leave me alone. They were all over me the whole time because I was out partying, had friends out there, and just it was, you know, I had a good time. So, yeah.
Well, man, I want to tell you this. I want to thank you for being here today. But next time I'm out there, we're going to play some ball. I'm going to look you up because I come out and visit Elias and his family. We're going to come out there. We're going to have this 3-point competition there.
I'm not hard to find. I'm ready to go. But what is the competition going to entail? Like, what are you going to have to do after I whoop your ass?
yeah. Maybe I have to shave my head to look exactly like you. I'm going to put your shade. What's the name of your shades?
Black Flies.
I love those, man. I was going to mention them before you said that. Love the little radiant. Man, those are so hard to find, man. Love them. Yeah, we'll come up with something for sure, man. We might have Paul White come out and be the referee.
Now, what I've done, though, just so you know, I've sent cats home barefoot. We played for shoes. I sent them home barefoot many a time. Time. I'm a problem.
We're going to do this, man. We're going to video this. We'll go to Santa Monica there, out there. I'm sure there's plenty of courts out there. We'll hook it up.
There's something. Once this COVID thing is done, we play 3 days a week at the beach, man. Beautiful court right on the water. 10:30 in the morning. There'll be 30, 40 guys out there getting it. Music. It's quite the scene, bro. Quite the scene.
Yeah.
I got to plug my website because it's just.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. Yeah.
Being altered, but it is blackdesignerclothing.com. Check me out. Purchase something if you like. I'm still toying with it. It's my first stab at it. I have a bunch of cool designs. I'm launching like 6 lines within one. The LACA, which is Los Angeles City Attire, is part of that. And the Black Beach Brothers brand is part of that. And Black Reality is part of that. There's a lot of black going on if you get the thing. But I'm a black designer. I want people to know that. But I also do something for everybody. It's not all about only the black thing. So go on, check it out. It'll be definitely a fair representation of Cyrus and what I am. So check me out, man. Black Designer Clothing.
Where can they follow you on social media?
Right now, the social media that you follow and check out to get all the updates is Cyrus MTV, Cyrus MTV on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat. It's Cyrus MTV, and I pretty much do updates on all that stuff all the time. Instagram is my favorite one. Facebook is still there, too. And I'll be selling on all channels, too, man. I keep it busy.
I sure appreciate you being here today, man. I want to wish you all the best in all your endeavors, everything you do, man. I'm so proud to have you on the show because, like I said, you're out there doing your thing, but you're helping other people around you. And just God bless you, man, and all that you do.
Yeah, thank you
so much, man. I appreciate you guys. And let me know what's going on, man, if I can ever come back on or help in any way, shape, perform, get at me, and hopefully you send me a copy of this too.
Sure will.
Thank you guys.
What a great show today. Thanks to Cyrus, our guest. Hey, listen, everybody, we want to thank our sponsors, Dead and Buried Inc. Those guys know what it's about.
Love Dead and Buried Inc. That's deadandburiedinc.com. Also, thanks to our MC Rick Viper, and we want you to be sure and join us next week when we have Coach Sims.
Yeah, Coach Sims. I've got a relationship with old Coach Sims. I've been out and talked to several of his teams. Now, this is a coach. He's been on Last Chance U on Netflix. Here's a special thing about him. He's put over 50 players in the NFL. He's just a specialist when it comes to developing these players and sending them to the big time.
Until then, be sure to subscribe to the podcast. As soon as it ends, do that, and you'll be notified when each new podcast is released. And plus, it helps us to continue to bring you new episodes each week.
And like and share the podcast on social media for a chance to win a brand new Life and Laughs podcast t-shirt. Just tag us so we can see that you did it, and we'll enter your name into the drawing.
Yeah, you can add us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/Life and Laughs Podcast.
On Instagram at Life_and_Laughs_Podcast.
Yes, and our brand new YouTube channel, just search Life and Laughs Podcast.
Until our next episode, remember to live life.
Love everybody.
And laugh always.
I wonder what kind of reality show they would put us on.
I don't know about us, but if you keep eating those crazy fast foods, it's going to put you on 600-pound life, man.
Oh, man. Hey.
I'm here to help. Ha 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 ha